You are listening to local and regional news produced by KMUN with help from our news partners. I'm Skylar Butenchen. It's Monday, April 21st. Oregon fishermen, winemakers, drink distributors, and clothing manufacturers met with Governor Tina Kotek at a roundtable discussion last week to discuss the extraordinary costs small and medium-sized companies are now facing because of Trump's tariffs. CEO of the Portland-based clothing company Wildfang, Emma McElroy, told Kotek she believes manufacturers of her company's size are going to go under. European Union leaders recently added a 25% tariff on Oregon shrimp to a list of retaliatory tariffs against the United States. Nick Edwards is a longtime shrimp fisherman out of Coos Bay. He exports nearly 50% of his catch, and nearly all of it goes to Danish buyers who are now looking elsewhere. At the roundtable, Kotek said the state was willing to work with businesses to come up with creative plans to respond to the chaotic federal changes. According to federal and state economists, it's Oregon consumers who will pick up much of the tab for tariffs. State Treasurer Elizabeth Steiner said federal economists estimate Trump's tariffs will cost the average U.S. household $3,800 more per year. And on top of that, the Treasury's statewide financial wellness scorecard recently found that the average Oregon family does not have an extra $500 available to cover emergencies. Economists say the full impact of these tariffs on Oregon's economy won't likely be known until midsummer. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Tillamook Headlight Herald, online at tillamookheadlightherald.com. Washington state lawmakers are scheduled to adjourn for the year in less than a week. Olympia correspondent Jeannie Lindsay reports they have plenty of major items left on their to-do list as time winds down.
The 105-day legislative session is nearly over, to the relief of pretty much everyone in Olympia. But critically, lawmakers still need to finalize the state's next spending plan. They're trying to close a multi-billion dollar budget gap. Democrats will need to strike a final deal that satisfies the governor after he's publicly critiqued their tax plans. He said he's open to some progressive revenue, but hasn't publicly said exactly how much. Lawmakers will also need to sort through lots of other legislation. They might pass a small wealth tax. They'll also attempt to settle a bill to cap rent hikes. And the fight over student and parents' rights in schools isn't over yet either. It's going to be a jam-packed week. I'm Jeannie Lindsay in Olympia.
And now, here's KMUN News Director Katie Frankowitz.
The top manager of several national wildlife refuges along the Columbia River had his last day on Friday. As OPB's Eric Newman reports, his departure comes amid reductions in the federal government.
Eric Anderson took a buyout from managing four national wildlife refuges. Those include Steigerwald Lake, Franz Lake, Pierce, and the Ridgefield National Wildlife Refuge. Anderson didn't respond to an interview request, but he left according to Jim Mall, the president of the nonprofit Friends of Ridgefield National Wildlife Refuge. Mall says ongoing staffing reductions like this are a threat to federal lands.
Clearly, you remove the experienced leadership from any organization with no plan for transition that threatens the function of those entities.
Mall says it'll be hard for the remaining Fish and Wildlife staff to manage the Columbia River refuges. They provide habitat for migratory waterfowl, sites for environmental education, and areas for migratory bird hunting. I'm Eric Newman reporting.
Washington State's affordable housing providers have been contending with rising insurance premiums, and in some cases, getting kicked off their plans altogether. NWPB's Susan Shane reports on what this could mean.
Jeff Guyette was sitting at his computer last May when he opened an email about his new property insurance premium. It had jumped to over $400,000 annually, more than double the year before.
I really didn't even know how to respond at first. I was, to use an old term, I was flabbergasted.
Guyette is the executive director of the Community Action Center in Pullman. His organization owns about 200 affordable housing units in Whitman County. For years, the agency broke even on those units. But with the higher premiums, Guyette is going to have to raise rent, and it still won't cover costs.
We just hate to make increases like that to folks who are already struggling.
Gayet is also having some difficult conversations about whether his organization can hold on at all.
It's very troubling, and it's the one thing I do lose sleep over.
Affordable housing providers across the state and the country are facing similar challenges. Jeff DeLuca is the executive director of the Washington State Community Action Partnership. Its members operate about 3,500 affordable housing units in the state. On average, those members' premiums have increased by around 300% in the past year. But not all of them can raise rents in response because they're already charging the maximum rent allowed by regulators. Here's DeLuca.
This insurance crisis is the biggest issue in the future of the affordable housing landscape that nobody is talking about and could cause an astronomical increase to homelessness.
Premium increases are only part of the problem. Around half of the housing providers in DeLuca's network have received letters stating their policies will not be renewed. If they can't find or afford insurance, DeLuca worries they might be forced to sell their units. Future projects could be affected too. DeLuca says the insurance dilemma is making it even less appealing to build affordable housing. As for the insurance companies, they say they're just trying to stay in business. Eric Goldberg is with the American Property Casualty Insurance Association, a national trade group.
The price of insurance is really like the canary in the coal mine, right? It's reflective of other factors that are going on in the market.
Those include climate change, the rising cost of labor and goods, which makes repairs more expensive, and an increasing number of lawsuits that insurers have to defend against. Then there's the fact that affordable housing might be built in areas with higher crime rates, and that some tenants might have what Goldberg calls, quote, higher risk profiles.
Insurers can't be overexposed. They need to be around and solvent to pay for all of their policyholders' losses.
Those increased costs are falling on the shoulders of housing agencies. Amber Johnson is on the board of the Nonprofit Insurance Program, a statewide insurance pool. She says that some members have had their deductibles raised to $500,000 per incident.
There are partners across the state who are already contemplating whether they can continue to provide affordable housing as a service.
Last fall, Washington's Office of the Insurance Commissioner studied the affordable housing market's challenges. It determined that the insurers' rates were not excessive and were backed by actuarial data. DeLuca from the Washington State Community Action Partnership has a hard time believing that. He says that things have worsened since that report came out. And regardless, he wants help from the state.
It's existential, frankly, to the affordable housing market in the state of Washington, probably throughout the region and the country as well.
The insurance commissioner's report did offer a dozen policy solutions, such as insure the insurers, subsidize costs for the housing providers, improve buildings so they're less likely to flood or burn. But none of these ideas are easy or free, and there's been no movement in the legislature so far. I'm Susan Shane reporting.
Hello, this is KMUN News Director Katie Frankowitz. Ever since I started at KMUN a couple years ago, there was something that was low on my priority list, but I really wanted to do it. And that was to make the news webpage at KMUN.org more useful to people. Maybe you've never visited the local news page, but I really hope you make some time for it going forward. Our former creative director, Emma Geddes, helped me launch it. Big thank you to her as she is currently driving cross-country to her new job. So what we've done is created a page that helps you see, very easily, many of the stories that I'm reporting week to week. You'll also find links to stories that our news partners have reported, stories that we may have also featured in a recent news broadcast. But I think the feature that I've ended up being most excited about, and that seems to be most exciting for other KMUN staff and volunteers, is what you'll find when you scroll down past those featured stories. Down near the bottom of the page, you'll find podcasts of our local and regional news segments. If you're a regular listener of the morning or evening news on KMUN, you know that KMUN news host Skylar Butenshin and I kind of pop in and out of the bigger NPR broadcast. Well, with the podcasts on the news webpage, you have the option to listen to just the local and regional news that Skylar and I put together each weekday, no NPR. We post the day's podcast at 8 a.m. each day, roughly syncing up with when morning news airs on KMUN 91.9. We've set it up so that around 10 days worth of recent news is available at any time. If you've missed a day or you prefer to sleep in, or maybe that hour between 8 and 9 is really hectic with getting kids out the door for school, yourself ready for the day, well, now you can listen anytime. It's the beauty of podcasts. You might be listening right now. So to check it out, go to kmun.org/news. That's kmun.org/news. And let us know what you think.
You're listening to news from KMUN. To hear us on the air and catch national news from NPR, tune in to 91.9 FM. Morning news begins at 7:59 every weekday. And of course, you will always be able to find today's local and regional news here at kmun.org. To contact the KMUN News Department, email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, @kmun.org.